I can see today you are really balanced, gender balanced. You made sure that you bring everyone.
Isn't it that if we men are a threatened species?
Well, it's up to you to feel threatened. Ours is not about making you feel threatened. It's just about dealing with transformational issues. That's all. Baba Krina. We're not going to be wasting much time. Already we are close to 25 minutes late or into our time. We would want to, without the waste of time, allow the new secretary that the last time interacted with us, we had Ariko, now we have Pilot Gwebu. Is our new secretary now. Pilot will be giving us the apologies, and then we'll, for the purposes of, you know, the new members from your side, I will introduce our members so that they know who's here, and some of those who are not yet here will be introduced too. So that you know exactly how is the committee formulated. Let me hand give to Gwebu. Give us the apologies quickly.
Thank you, Chair. I received apologies from Dr. Rabi, Honorable Olomisa, Honorable. Yeah. Dr. Rabi is attending another committee. Honorable Olomisa, what I got from his office that he has other engagement, and Honorable Fanda Merwe had just arrived from China today because of the Manila policy.
Okay, those who haven't apologized, they are absent, and we're not going to entertain them. But for the sake of the meeting, maybe it's important that I introduce other members. I'll start from my right. We have Babu Ntuli, who's also the whip of the committee. Comrade Chris. Yeah. We have just on my immediate left, I have Ubabu Shitango Mamabasa, who's also a member of the management committee. And then we have our the member, Mr. Mare. Come again. Okay. The members that I introduced prior to Mr. Mare are representing the ANC. And Mr. Mare is representing DA. He says he's the only odd one. I don't know why. My name is Matulare Coleman, the chair of the committee. We do have our support staff here. We have, as I said, from my extreme right, is Venetia Williams, who's my PA. Next to her is someone we borrowed from the department. So we're sharing with the department, sort of. No, I'm joking. She's the PLO for the minister. Swazi, I think you know her. And then I've already introduced Kwevu. And then we have Nwabisa Belekani, who is our stretcher. And then we... What's her name? Okay. We have at the back there the committee assistant, Mr. Tisana. The member that just came in is Mem Tikeledi Sotesi, who's also a member of the management committee. Yeah, those are the members. And I would love to have everyone introducing him or herself. So especially those I haven't introduced, because we have other stakeholders or people who have interest in the business of the committee who are most of the time with us just to follow up on the issues or discussions within the committee. Before I hand over to Mr. Kina, I will hand over to you for introduction.
Good morning. I'm Khalid Said, Ethical Solutions.
Okay. Just a brief intro as to what is it that you're doing for others who understand.
Yeah. We basically do monitoring and strategic parliamentary work for the Banking Association of South Africa and the American Chamber of Commerce. Yeah.
Thank you. Baba.
Right, I'm James Matiza from the Parliament and Monitoring Group.
PMG. Ma'am at the back, we need for choosing ourselves, yeah? Yes.
I'm John Sibal, I'm from Media Telephone, and I'm trying to translate the people.
And now hand over to you, Mr. Kuna.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the members of the committee for firstly inviting us as the Industrial Development Corporation of South Africa to come and share with yourselves our annual report as was tabled. And also thank you for giving us the time that we have today. I think we have enough time which we can hopefully engage with the committee. We always welcome this opportunity. First, it helps us to get a sense from the members of the areas we should be improving, and also highlighting some of the areas where we're doing well. So we would welcome the interaction. Let me introduce the team chair. Indeed, it is balanced agenda. We did not rent any crowd. I can assure the committee members. everybody who is from the IDC has a specific task, and they do execute that. So I will, when I introduce them, you will see in terms of their areas of responsibility. On my immediate right, chair, it's Neo Mukhesi. Neo is one of our divisional executives. She's in charge of marketing and corporate affairs. And then on my immediate left is Mr. Ashraf Dinda. He's our head of financial management, so he's the one who looks after the books. So he will go through a couple of slides, Chair, which will show that we are still sustainable and then we can do more. And then next to Ashraf Dinda is Christo Van Sale. I'm sure the committee has seen Christo a number of times. He's one of our senior strategists at the IDC. And next to Christo Van Sale is Kisiboni Maema. She is our head of corporate communication. She's the one who's been running up and down, Chair. We'll talk about the basket, we've got the basket and some showcasing some of the things that we will be doing. And Chair, we also have our own DK lady as well. next to Kisiboni is the DK lady, Makaulele. She's our senior economist at the IDC, so she's the one who tells us where the economy is going to go. And next to DK lady is our regional officer in the Western Cape, the regional manager, in the Western Cape province, and that's Mr. Lizon Toko. I think the committee members know him. And next to Neo Mukhesi, who's on my immediate right, is my boss, Chair, and that's Lebubu Dibe, who's the manager in my office. And then next to Lebubu Dibe is our group company secretary, who ensures that all our governance issues are in order, and that's Mrs. Effie Mokame. So that's the team we have, Chair. With your permission, should we start? Chair, the presentation, with your indulgence.
Sorry. I heard you have a video that you wanted to show us. Perhaps we should start with it, so that before we continue.
Yes, maybe if I can ask this gentleman, maybe I think you should, otherwise you're going to have a strained neck when by the time you're here. Chair, the presentation, we will start, as you indicated, with the video. It's just about 8 minutes, but it's going to cut down on some of the examples we have. We decided, in the pack, in the presentation pack that we have really four parts. The financial results, which Mr. Dinda will take us through. The operational review. In the operational review, that talks about how we've done operationally and where we've invested, in which provinces and the steps and all of that. In there, together with the sector development activities, are some of the examples of the impact we've made, the cases. So the video will touch on most of those. And as a result, I will not go through those again. We can take questions. I will highlight maybe one or two just to demonstrate the point. And then we will talk about briefly about prospects. So that the committee has a sense. So the video is, it will take about 8 minutes, Chair, but as I say, then we will not repeat some of the examples that we have here. Also, Chair, we've prepared a basket, which is there, which we will give each member. It's not a bribe, Chair. Another one. It's not a bribe. It's us showcasing what we do, because sometimes we go to supermarkets, we go wherever, we buy the things, but then we don't realize that these are the things that government institutions have facilitated, some of those things. So we will do. It's largely on the agricultural side. It's local countries. Those are the companies that we funded locally in South Africa, where IDC was very instrumental in ensuring that those companies do exist. We are not the only partners. There are partners in some of them. In some cases, we've stepped in when they were experiencing problems, and as a result of our intervention, they're sustainable. So this is just a showcase so that you can touch and feel and all of this. We did not bring any diamonds, because I think naturally we will...
Yeah.
Well, we've got one more, so you can have another one. There's another one in the basket which you can have. Okay, so Chair, we'll start with the video then, and then we'll go to thank you.
Partnering with private sector enterprises to promote sustainable development and create jobs across the full spectrum of industrial sectors. Acting as a primary driving force in revitalizing the economy. This is the IDC in action.
There is no addition to our intervention that is firstly, we wanted to respond to the issue of power generation, but also we wanted to respond to the issue of environment.
The IDC Green Industry Business Unit has to develop, grow, and invest in projects designed to enhance the environment and reduce carbon emissions. The Solar Academy of Sub-Saharan Africa is rolling out the installation of an innovative solar water heating system in RDP houses across 7 provinces.
Job creation is an important part, and I think ultimately we realize as people of South Africa that we have to find new ways of creating jobs. We can't all the time depend on government to do that, and I think an industry like the renewable energy business can potentially facilitate a huge amount of new jobs in South Africa. And our project specifically employs 800 people direct or indirect. That's significant.
In the poor rural area of Kipunzing in Limpopo, the Mount Mary Country Lodge provides accommodation in Rondavo and Harry, and facilities for conferences, functions, and weddings.
One big challenge is finance. Yes, we are very lucky because, you know, as if I had a little bit of finance, and I took a second bond, you know, in my house, and then to build this lodge. And then immediately after that, I realized that I can't make something. I got stuck and I went to financial institutions like IDC, where I got some help in order to complete, you know, my project.
The lodge employs 13 local people and more than 1 project from local farmers and entrepreneurs.
It became evident from the global economic crisis that I experienced that some businesses, which ordinarily would have been successful, are not successful.
The IDC has saved thousands of jobs in various industrial sectors. Tepid U International applied for help from the IDC's distress fund to save nearly 600 jobs in the factory, and more than 1,000 jobs at supplier farms, including 9 emerging black farmers.
We experienced a disastrous year in 2010, and it was with that that we approached the IDC for emergency funding. To basically keep us on the rails, so to say.
The IDC plays a significant role in aiming this uniquely South African international brand. Sasol Steel in Cambridge, KwaZulu-Natal, manufactures aluminium zinc-coated steel for roofing, which is superior and more cost-effective than the standard galvanized corrugated sheet, offering price and quality benefits for the lower to middle-income housing market. The business currently has just over 300 employees, but that is expected to increase significantly as production builds up to full capacity. The products and the factory location are both IP included for export. The project was funded in a partnership between the IDC, the European Investment Bank, and the International Finance Corporation.
There's a phase 2 plan here, and for sure, we want to work further with the IDC as far as phase 2 is concerned.
The Indigo McCarthy Trust has 200 black women as beneficiaries. The IDC has provided the funding to buy a 30% share of Common Engineering. Government has been providing mud pumps and rock fuel to the mining industry for over 30 years and is a very profitable and well-run business. The empowerment credentials of Indigo McCarthy will help the company grow from strength to strength.
On that basis, the IDC has been an ideal funder because it's provided the platform for a transaction such as the one that we've entered into, and one that we thoroughly enjoyed because everybody has benefited from this in a very positive manner.
The shareholders of Sobeikwe are four black men and four black women who form eucalyptus plantations in Ipoh, KwaZulu-Natal. They have acquired over 260 hectares of land from SAPI using funding from the IDC. The loan has been partially repaid with a grant from the Land Redistribution for Agricultural Development Program of the Department of Land Affairs. SAPI will buy 85% of the wood harvest for power, and the remaining 15% will be sold for treated coal.
Sifisa kwa sisebenzisane nabo mabafuna amathuba omsebenzi sokawufayisha nabo khona.
There was a shortage of timber in South Africa, and the business can quick a benefit from the 23% growth in the market for the medium to long term.
If you look at our activities, it is a big commitment, but the partnership has to work.
The market for surgical stitching sutures is 80% dominated by one multinational company. The IDC has provided funding to Sintercot, a local company producing similar quality sutures at a substantially lower price.
This product is one of the most used products for breast cancer. In 2008 January, this suture by both multinational companies, without naming them, used to cost to any a single suture in here, which would cost 328 rand a suture. There are 12 in here. Today the same hospital, using our product, one suture is in a 6 rand.
The funding will allow Centagon to buy its currently rented premises that are world class and certified for the production of medical equipment. Cosmoese Manufacturing produces polypropylene woven bags. It is 100% BEE code and 80% by women. The IDC had already provided funding for the purpose of buying machinery. But their business was limited by the restricted supply of polypropylene fabric.
In 5 years' time, Kabarabusi is now just a single because my job is marketing here. So I will see even capacity in Kabarabusi after 2-3 years for the expansion.
Additional IDC funding has allowed them to incorporate the manufacturing of woven polypropylene into their company to ensure their supply and for sale to other producers.
The success for us would be how many sustainable businesses that it has that it was at least contributed to. The success would also be how many new entrepreneurs that we brought into the picture. The success also to us as IDC from all our activities would be to say how many sustainable jobs from all of these activities. So we are really focusing on job creation since it's also central to government's objectives.
This is the South Africa that the IDC is helping to build. This is the IDC in action.
Thank you, Chair. Now we'll move to the financial statement, which Mr. Ashraf Tinda will take us through. Thank you, Chair.
Good morning. Overall, the financial performance of IDC has been very good, with net profit after tax of 2.7 billion for the 2010-2011 financial year, and that's 22% above the previous year. The balance sheet remains strong and provides a good platform from which to deliver on its strategies going forward. If we look at the detailed income statement, revenue for the year is 8.9 billion compared to last year 7.8 billion, and it's up by 15%. We've got an operating subsidiary called Fosco, which accounts for a large portion of that revenue, 4.6 billion in the current year, and they've increased their revenue from the previous year by about 1 billion. In addition to that, I've got another slide that shows more detail on the other income that makes up the revenue. Cost of sales is largely driven by Fosco, which is, and that's in line with their sales, is up 34%. Look at financing expenses, down 34%, and that's mainly as a result of accessing cheaper funding, but in addition to that also the better exchange rate has resulted in lower financing costs. If we look at operating expenses, 3 billion compared to 3.4 billion last year, it's an 11% saving. That's largely due to reduced impairments and also improved efficiencies on the cost side. On the capital gains, we haven't sold anything significant in the current financial year. Compared to the previous year where there was certain compulsory buybacks from Aston and Arsenal. Then we move further down, we look at the share of associated equity accounted investments, that's investments where we hold between 20% and 50%. That increased significantly from 40 million last year to 633 million this year. And that's largely driven by a couple of companies, Mozal, aluminium smelter in Mozambique. The previous year there was a loss of 14 million. Current year there was a profit of 194 million of that 633. And then other entities, York Timber, Aquarius, Platinum, and Merafi Resources contributed to that 633 million. On the tax side, we had a tax payable of 206 million compared to a tax credit in the prior year of 181 million, which resulted in an overall net profit of 2.7 billion for the year compared to 2.2 billion last year. That's 22% up. The other comprehensive income there is revaluation of investments, which 10.9 billion compared to 12.4 billion last year. On the sources of income, dividends from listed investments were 2.2 billion compared to 1.5 billion in the prior year. And then interest income has increased from 775 million to 1.1 billion in the current year. The preference share income, that negative of 668, is as a result of how we account for preference share income. We have to accrue the income over the years, and in the previous year we accrued income of 703 million. We actually received that income in the current year, so we couldn't double count for that, so that's why it results in a negative figure in the current year. If we look at the balance sheet, loans and advances have increased by 16% from 12 billion from 10 billion to 12 billion, and investments have increased from by 19% from 69 billion to 82 billion. I've got a detailed slide on that, so I'll speak about that a bit more. And then property, plant and equipment and inventories, largely from the operating subsidiary Fosco, have increased by 16%. In terms of reserves have increased by 17%, from 78 billion in the previous year to 91 billion in the current year. And that's largely as a result of the 2.7 billion profit and the 10.9 billion revaluation of the investment. Our borrowings have increased by 89% from 3.5 billion to 6.7 billion. I'll speak about that a bit more in a further slide. And then our deferred tax liability has increased by 32% from 3.8 billion to 5 billion. And that's largely future tax that will have to be paid on the disposal of investments. The balance sheet still remains strong. Total assets of 106 billion, up 21% from the prior year of 88 billion. if you look at the balance sheet over the past 5 years, loans and advances have more than doubled from 5.1 billion in 2007 to 11.6 billion in the previous financial year. Investments have increased from 10.8 billion in the same period to 14.1 billion. The revaluation of those investments have increased significantly from 39 billion in 2007 to 71.8 billion in 2011. Our debt equity ratio remains relatively low at 7% in the current at the end of 2011. But if we take into account commitments that were that existed at the end of March last year, and if we assume that all those commitments were advanced, then our debt equity ratio would increase to 29%. In terms of our borrowings, this is an indication of the borrowings over the past 5 years. In the last year, we've significantly started increasing our borrowings in anticipation of increased lending activity that we foresee going forward. So our foreign currency based borrowings have increased from 3.7 billion to 5.4 billion, and then our rand based borrowings have increased from 500 million to 2 billion in the previous year. Thank you.
Thanks, Ashraf. Chair, in summary, what we're saying is on the financial side, the IDC is still strong so that it can be able to do more. I mean, you see when we talk in terms of the prospects, what we're planning to do. So it's at the back of this strong balance sheet which we've seen. What we've also demonstrated that over time, and if you look at the 5 years, I mean, the level of activity has indeed really increased. One could say we should do more, and which is why we're committing that we should do. We will do more. But the other factors, when we talk about some of the key challenges that we see, that would need to be in place for us to really increase our level of investment. So I think the message on the financials that we give to the committee is that we still have the muscle. The company is being run prudently, but really making sure that we achieve what we've been set for. We don't get comfort in maximizing profit. That's not that. What we want to do is to make sure that we're sustainable so that we can put the money back into the economy. I think that's really the message that we're saying on the financial statement. And just also to give the committee a comfort that we're not reckless in what we're executing our mandate. So when we go to the operational review, when we talk about the operations, the investment, in terms of the when we look at the period that we're reporting, the objectives and the outcomes that we have aimed to achieve have stayed the same. Let me apologize, Chair. On the screen, we couldn't seem to get the headings in, but I think the old content is there. I think next time we will bring our IT guy with us, and maybe we'll get it right. But in terms of...
very briefly, seeing that it will be done in sections, or you know, wouldn't it be better for us if there's clarity questions on, for instance, finance, that one can deal with it while it's now fresh in our memories, and obviously as we go to the next one, that we ask those questions then, because otherwise you come right at the end and then you must ask questions that was posed to us by finance right in the beginning. Just
I think that's a good suggestion, Kamara. Perhaps we should entertain questions. in yesterday's business, it was quite clear that we spent a lot of time going back and forth. I think that's good that we first entertain finances. Those who have questions related to financial can deal with us.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much for the presentation. Obviously, on face value.
It is very good. So well done to IDC, I think, under very difficult circumstances. I think one also understands that you increase your leverage, you know, and you can you're actually in a position that you can increase your leverage in terms of debt, you know, to drive the project forward. I just want to ask a question on that slide where you gave the sources of income, where you gave the 703 million preference shares revenue, and then the negative in the current year. And you indicated that it was received in this year, but you obviously documented it in the previous year. Is that the way that one should do it? Don't you put it into the records when you receive the revenue, or do you do that, you know, when you determine that it is money generated in a specific financial year, irrespective of when it is received? That's my first one. And then just the other one on the reevaluation of investments. Because on that slide of the balance sheet items, you give the investment at cost, which, you know, there's increase from 10.8% to 14.1%, but then your revaluation of investments. Now, what is that? I think the revaluation of, is it property, for instance, that is real value? Is it shares that has been revalued? What is that revaluation of investments? And was it done at a specific date, or was it movement over a period? Because we know what happened with especially with shares. You might get at the end of the financial year, it might be for you it was very good. The next day it might be very bad. So this one just has got clarity in terms of your indications in that, and that's my two dominant questions. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thanks, Jefferson. I'll start there when we were observing the video. You said you are committed in seven provinces about the heaters, the solar heaters. I'm not sure whether the heaters we have been installed, solar heaters in KwaZulu-Natal and the Eastern Cape.
Can we come to that? We're still on financial. We'll come to the what you're referring to now after he has presented.
Oh,
right now,
okay.
We're still on the financial. Any question related to the finances?
That's what I wanted to check, but not on what. Yeah, in relation with the finance, I wanted to check.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I wanted to check because when they install those heaters, you find that, in the Eastern Cape, they were saying that, or in KwaZulu-Natal, they are saying that they are supposed to pay 500 rand for the installment, but when you go to the Eastern Cape, it is free. Now, I wanted to check who is funding. Are you, whether it depends on the municipality or you fund that? Secondly, it's about the medicine. I've seen there that when the medicine is produced here, it's cheaper than when it is imported. Now, I want to check that whether do you subsidize the manufacturers in the country, because we are always having this, particularly the agriculture, to say the imports are cheaper because their countries are subsidizing the manufacturers, and then that's why here they are expensive because South Africa is not subsidizing their manufacturers. I want to check with this medicine thing whether you do fund them so that their product is cheaper than the import manufacturer.
Thank you. thank you. Although I think both of your questions could be answered in the next after the next presentation.
Thanks, Colleague Chair. Thanks, Babutwina and the team. My question is primarily how are the financials speaking to the challenge of narrowing the gap between those that have always been in industry in the previous government and those that are emerging into industry as the present government. I'm looking at the first B of the triple BEE to say to what degree are these figures speaking to address that challenge. And then my second question is in terms of costs. When we look at slide page 4, when I look at other income there, I noticed that during the year, financial year, the previous one, we have that 159, and during this financial year, we have that 131 billion. So I'm just asking myself, I would have expected that it should be the opposite in terms of whether it grows or whether it decreases, you know. But just a comment there, because what explains us going down from 159 to 131? Is there anything that we can attach to that? Then there is also the net gains, net capital gains. I also note the difference. I would have expected that the difference, because this year overall, 2011, I mean, you have done better than 2010, so what is it that, that is a bit of an explanation. I would have expected the opposite. And then my last one, but last income, is when it comes to the cost of capital, I am on page 6. the loans on under the liabilities there, as well as the deferred taxation liability, to what degree do they cost IDC? In other words, is it what you can call a planned necessary cost, or is it possible that the costs are far too high, that they're under loans and deferred taxation liability? Then the last one, I could not understand on page 8, if you could just repeat the explanation, rent-based, foreign currency-based, I just couldn't understand when it was put for us.
Can we get the amendment? You covered. Okay. May I hand over to you, Mr.
Thanks, Chair, for those questions. Largely, most of them will be answered by us, financial manager. But I will try. I agree with you, Chair. Could we take Mr. Ntuli's questions to talk, because we're going to talk about the operations, and then we can address them there. I think that's probably going to be better that way. I just want to make a statement, and then Ashraf will answer. The way we account for our financials That would be in terms of the Companies Act and in terms of what the IIFRS. So anything that we would account in terms of the international recognized investment. So we are in line with it, how we treat the preferentials, how we recognize the income and all of that. That's strictly in terms of that, which is why when you look at our audit report, it will always be it should always be unqualified, because if we don't comply, then they would be able to specify. But then Ashraf can maybe try again on the preference of why we do it that, because it's how you recognize it, that you can explain.
Thanks. On the preferences, we account for the income when we're entitled to it. So in this case, we were entitled to it in the previous year, but we actually only received it in the current year. So we recognized it in 2010, and then we couldn't double count it in 2011. So we don't work on a cash basis. In terms of the revaluation of investments, it's revaluation of both listed and unlisted investments. They happen in this case, the valuations were done at the 31st of March. They're done every year, and we normally do them on the listed side, we do them on a monthly basis. On the unlisted side, we do them 3 or 4 times a year. And the increase in the value for this current financial year was 10 billion. And since March, the market has declined somewhat, and up to well, the market goes up and down, but currently we the decline is roughly in the region of about 8 billion.
On the question that relates to, do our financials indeed speak to the previously disadvantaged, the marginalized? At least in our opinion, on the sizes of the businesses that we target, they do, at least we think they do. Because if you look at the number, because of the 221, give or take, that we approved in the previous financial year, about 137 of those have gone to small and medium-sized enterprises. Of which, of that 137, about 104 have gone to black empowered companies. Yes, of that one three seven. That's in terms of the numbers. In terms of the values, about 30% of that has gone to the small and medium sizes business. So in our minds, I think we are indeed trying to address that. Because remember, if you look at it in value, you might say maybe 30% is low, but we also do a large transaction. So that's why then value-wise, they would not necessarily be at the same extent as if you look into the value. If you look into the numbers, so that's how we think we are indeed addressing that. And the fact that the balance sheet that we have is still relatively strong, because we try and manage it prudently, it enables us to do a bit more of those. Because you are taking in new businesses, you are taking in new entrepreneurs, the people who have not run the business before. So we need to have interventions that can assist them, because it's not only the financing that you give. We do what we call pre or post investment support to assist them in that regard. So we are, so that's on.
And how would you define the black in terms of how you finance it? Just to get a clarity on that.
The figures quoted, they refer to black empowered businesses, and that's any business with more than 25% black shareholding. Black has been defined in the black has been defined in the relevant acts, being African, Indian, colored.
The definition
no further, you know, out of that, because the 30% I understand in value for the black, but then would you further break down in terms of Africans, colors, and Indians, so that you can be able then to ascertain as to where lies your you know, your focus. Even if it's not now, if you don't have those that information, but you can send us that information.
Yes, Chair, I think we will do that. As we have the stats, I mean, we can provide. We don't have it with us as we speak, but we will notice that, Chair. And then Ashraf will do the other income.
On the other income,
the chair, we take the definition as provided by either DTR or whatever the government. So we make sure that we are aligned with that. So I'm not going to answer directly. So we are guided by what government says. Yeah. So that's how we define it. That's how we define it. Chair, we will provide the steps that you need.
Okay, I know I can see you talking to me, but it's fine. You may proceed then, Mr. Kenner.
On the other income, which has declined from 159 million to 131 million, it's made up of two things largely. On the IDC itself, it's made up of fee income, which has increased. And on these are consolidated financials, so we have to consolidate all entities in which we control more than 50%. There was an entity that had an insurance claim in the previous year, which there was no insurance claim in the current year, and that's the reason why the other income has declined.
Maybe a further point to make on the other income. The other income you cannot predict year on year. That's why we classified it. So if it's there in 1 year, like this insurance income, it does not necessarily mean it should be there. So when we look at the trends, we would get worried if maybe it's the revenue that is not there or the interest received or the dividend, because those ones are the ones that you interest. But the others, it would happen as and when, and you can't predict that. That's why even if you look at percentages, it's a small part, but it shouldn't be. Because in other years, it might not even.
On the capital gains,
just for members' interest, I think if you feel your question is not adequately being answered, you're more than welcome to make a follow up immediately so that you don't come back here. All right.
On the capital gains, which were 573 million in the prior year. And only 36 million in the current year. In the prior year, we had two compulsory share buybacks by Aspen and ArcelorMittal. So we were compelled to participate in those transactions and sell some of our shares.
I'm struggling to hear. You can talk to the mic.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe my financial manager is never.
No, don't be. We are part of you.
And we are in the same size color.
You don't need to be nervous. We are part of your family, and you are part of our family. So we get to assist one another, not necessarily to. We're not here to grill you, just to understand what happened, that's all.
On the net capital gains, in the prior year, there were two compulsory share buybacks that we had to participate in on Aspen and ArcelorMittal. So that resulted in the 573 million in the prior year. In the current year, there was only a small shareholding that we disposed of on one of our unlisted investments. There was no need to sell any additional shares because we had sufficient funding in place to meet our lending activities. So there was no real requirement to sell any additional shares.
Chair, may I add maybe for further clarification? What happens is which will come to the point which was raised on the, which was raised on the, this is linked to the revaluation of the investment. What happens is we have investments, and then from time to time we sell some of those investments so that we can invest back into the economy. So now, when you look at the value at which you had bought those investments at the cost and the value in which you sell, so if you sell more, that difference in the money is referred to as a capital gain. So now, if we look at this particular year where there's been a decrease, two investments in particular, Aspen and ExxonMobil, bought back the shares. We did not have to sell anything. So they bought back some of those shares. And as a result of that, there was a compulsory buyback, and then we participated in that. So it was not a planned selling, because what we would do is we would look at the requirements to invest some of the cash, and then informed by that, then we would decide, okay, maybe then we need more money to invest, so then let's sell some of the shares. But in this case, there was no need for that, but it was just a compulsory buyback, which is why then in that particular, in the previous year, in 2010, we had that higher value compared to this year, because we still had enough resources to then continue fund this investment through the cash that we have, but also the borrowings, that the money that we had lent, which Ashraf will explain the rent and whatever. So there was no need for us to go out and sell the shares. As we increase the level of investment, let me, because I know when we come back, maybe in 2 to 3 years' time, that capital gain figure will be very big, because that would be as a result of us needing more money from the investments that we have, so we'll sell some of those. But not now. I mean, as the investments increase, the more we increase the investment, we need to liquidate or sell some of those investments. So the capital gains figure would increase in the future, but not for this year. There was no need for that.
But under what with circumstances would a company decide to buy back? And under what which circumstances would you then decide, no, we're not giving you, rather
sell? And normally what happens is companies, particularly those that are listed, in fact it's mostly all those that are listed, would look at the number of shareholders that they have, that's one, but also they'd look at the cash that they have. So for example, if they have enough cash and they think some of that cash will not be used for any expansions or any investments, they've got excess cash, then they would say, let's rather buy back some of the shares, that's one. One of the reasons why you want to buy back some of the shares is because too many shareholders, some of them are very small, the administration of that is just too much and it costs you a lot. And then sometimes also they want to have those shares and keep those shares in the what they call the treasury, so that when they want to do further expansions and the value of the investments increase, then they can be able to sell some of those shares. So that's what really informs the company. Now, as IDC, you would look at the price at which, because we are one of the investors, I mean, there's a number of investors. In fact, in all of these, we are not the majority shareholders. In fact, we are a minority shareholder. So you look at the value at which they buy back. So if it's at a premium, it's the same as if you were to go into and go and sell. So then you'd rather, if the premium is fair, you'd rather just also allow that the buyback happen, so that you can take that excess money that you get, so that you can invest. So that's really what informs us.
On the deferred tax liability, that's the tax that we would have to pay, the 5 billion, if we had to sell all our investments at the end of March. If we had to dispose of all the investments, we would have a tax liability at that date of 5 billion. So that would be a cost which has already been accounted, which has already been provided.
Wasn't actually paid.
Not actually paid, no, just provided. In terms of the borrowings, the increase in the borrowings is effectively in anticipation of future lending activities that we're going to undertake. Those borrowings, the split between the rand-based and the foreign currency-based. Foreign currency base is generally from foreign DFIs or other commercial institutions. On the rand side, in the current year, we had
a facility that we concluded with the UIF, and there was a bond issued to the UIF, which resulted in the rand-based borrowings increasing.
Chair, let me just, this is just for further clarification. When we go out and we borrow, we do it in a number of ways. One is having bilaterals, that means the relationship between two institutions. For an example, the African Development Bank, if just one, just an example, or some of the European Union funds, which is why then you see the foreign part being the big part. But also what we have is what we call syndications, where banks come together, be it development finance or just normal commercial banks. They come together, then they club, and then we issue out the facility. So that's really the two main ones. And last year, we had a new one, which is the unemployment. Okay. Yes, we have a bilateral, which is one-on-one, mm-hmm. and then we have syndications. So those could be either in foreign or in rand. So in both cases. But in our case, in fact, almost.
What would be a dominant foreign?
I will come to that. Broadly, what we have, at least for us, I mean, we have a number of them, which I don't maybe when we in fact one will come in clearer maybe in 2 years time. How we borrow, the sources for us, the dominant one is bilateral, which is one-on-one with the development finance institutions that we have. So it's mostly European and the African development, both those are the big ones. And also we do have some facilities with South African banks as well. So those will be the bilateral, one-on-one. But we also have syndication, where we issue out a facility and then a number of banks and development finance institutions come together, they club. So then you're not only dealing with one borrower, although there's an arranger, there's one person and a contact point, but you're dealing with a number of them, they club together and then they give you a facility together. So those are the two main ones. And those ones are largely in foreign currency, which is why in that slide, if you look at the foreign side, that's the big one for us, which is it's largely in dollar and euro. So those are the largest ones. These help us, Chair, when we do some of the investments outside of the South African continent, outside of South Africa into the continent, because we do invest in the rest of the continent. So they do help us, because you know, some of those investments, you have to do them in dollars or in euros. So that's one. The rand one is because I think we did report last time that we were issuing a bond when we were looking at prospect, you know, the prospect then, but this has happened now, a private placement with the unemployment insurance fund to assist particular companies that are in distress. So that increase is including part of that now, where you've seen, I think it's in slide 8, where we've seen the rand-based increasing a bit more, because it incorporates that unemployment insurance fund, which is our new source of funding. I think going forward, Chair, you'll see, as we do it more and more, there will be a domestic, because we've registered a bond with the Johannesburg Securities Exchange, where we will tap into the local market as we increase our level of activity. So you'll see the more when we do, the more into the local economy, that bond, that South African-based facility will also increase to respond to that. Okay.
Can I just
point
to the cost of
that
foreign
That cost of that foreign loans, because I mean, if I interpret the global market correctly, I mean, you get very cheap loans in terms of low interest rates from foreign. Is that the case? How does that affect your whole costing structure in terms of lending? The cost depends largely on the institution that we're borrowing from. There are certain institutions that would give us lower interest rates, but they would require us to spend the money in a certain way. So, and then we would have to report back to them on how that money was spent. And if those were at a subsidized rate, we would then in turn lend that out to our local companies at a subsidized rate as well. I think if we do get subsidized borrowings in, we do then lend some of those out at subsidized rates.
It's not only the cost that's an attraction, it's not just the cost is important, but it's also the tenure of those facilities. Because for those foreign borrowings, we do get long-term money. And in some of the investments that we make, we need long-term money. So that combination for us comes in very, very, very handy.
But also then it's actually used cost.
Okay. Would you give us examples of banks that you, international banks that you normally borrow from?
Yeah, we have the African Development Bank, which is for the continent. We have KfW, which is the Dutch one. We have Propaco. We have KfW. In fact, we will be launching some facilities. We have Propaco and the AFD. Propaco. It's the French one. AFD and Propaco, those, I think, they're sister companies, but they're the French. That's the French ones. Which one? We have EIB, the European Investment Bank, which we have. So those are the big ones. I mean, the relationship in fact, in some of these that we've mentioned, we come a long way. We come a long way with them. So those would be some of them. I mean, we've got a number of them, but we can provide the committee. But those ones, I mean, I remember them because those are the big ones, which the relationship has extended over a number of years. Some of the facilities would have
along the same big ones.
The syndication would even be more than those, because in some cases we'd have those ones, and then we'd have institutions like the Societe Generale, for an example. You can even have an Investec. We've had an Investec. We can even have a Standard Bank. So we can even have a combination of both the local and the international ones, because there they give a small amount. For an example, if we in one institution, maybe for the bilaterals, we have $100 million. In the syndication, you find that each one will put in 10 million, 5 million, and other ones.
Yeah. It's quite interesting to have that understanding of where your income comes from. Because it's obviously driven by the investments. And I think the question will come after when we deal with the actual report that you'll be giving yourself. Why I'm saying that, because we just want to understand how you place sort of whatever that you have got. The question that I had was I don't know. Are you done with your questions? With your questions, yes. That's why I'm coming in. I thought maybe I'm disturbing. Okay. What I wanted to know, you said when you started, we are not in the business of making profit. But obviously, you want to remain liquid so that you can continue assisting the country in its mission of developing industries and also growing the economy, creating jobs. The way I look at I'm looking at your revenue versus your gross profit. Is it not saying you're focusing more on real profit than on actual, assisting in growing companies and so forth? What would you say in response to that? Because we normally get this question as to whether are you really helping in industrializing South Africa, or you're focusing more on making profit at the expense of really building companies that you see economic activity expanding and jobs being created. Would you answer that? I know it's a political question, but you have to answer it because you are implementers of some of the policies. You want to build on what I was just asked?
Okay.
mine is also to follow up to say when IDC borrows money, does it find it more prudent to borrow from South African banks, or will we say reality forces you to borrow more from outside the country? But then the second question is, in terms of investing the money, are you satisfied that relative to real investment, real in the sense of job creating, you know, capital investment, versus investment in what we can call speculation, what would be your comment on contrasting those two? Thanks, Commissioner.
You have said on that question that the chairperson has asked you, I think that's a difficult one obviously for you, but I think it's a very realistic one, because we know that traditionally industrial cooperation was known for only developing industries and large industries to a large extent, whereas the new requirement from government is to get you involved in job creation. And we know that to a large extent, large corporations doesn't really create jobs. So it's more your smaller businesses that creates jobs. But that's probably also your less profitable, if I can use that phrase, in terms of borrowings and investments. So to what extent in addition to what the chairperson asked, to what extent is that taking your focus away from industrial development to more I don't want to call it a social responsibility investment driving strategy, because that impacts on your core business that you've had over many years that you've done very successfully, but it's also can impact on your bottom line. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chen, for the question. In fact, what you've asked is what makes IDC interesting, an interesting place to be at, where we have to balance all of this, Chen. From where we come from, Chen, we do believe that we do make sure that we strike that balance. I said our main aim is not to maximize profit, and I will repeat, Chair, it's not to maximize profit. The responsibility we have is that we are sustainable, because if you are sustainable, then you are able to do more, because if you are not, then that means we have to always go back to the shareholder and ask for more money. But also what it means for us is if we are sustainable, that means the investments that we've made are indeed sustainable. I think it is important, because we're saying if you're going to invest in a company, and when you do your due diligence and your analysis, we need to be convinced that that company will outlive you. Okay, I mean, things do change. I mean, we know, I mean, the environment does. But I mean, all the facts at the time you assess that must be that. Because if we say we want to create jobs and we don't have sustainable companies, then we can't create jobs that are sustainable. We'll have a job today and then next month it's gone. And then that means we'd have all lost, both the entrepreneur and ourselves. So that's something that we always, in fact, it's in our genes, if we have to say that, if we are united, that we have to have a sustainable business so that then we can ensure that those jobs are sustainable. So the fact that we make profit, how you measure sustainability is, unfortunately, it has to be. So you have to make some profit, because then you're saying the money that you've invested in is giving you a bit more, be it more in terms of the interest or more in terms of the dividends. But some of the investments that we have do outperform even our own expectations, because maybe where they're exporting or the markets that they're in have performed much better than we all have anticipated. Then they sometimes make those profits. And then what we do then, Chair, maybe to also talk to Mr. Mare's question, of balancing the new and what we're doing in terms of job creation. What we do, we from time to time ring fence some of the money to deliberately cross-subsidize that. And most of those would be to encourage the entrance of new entrepreneurs, but also to encourage those businesses that can create jobs. The latest edition we have, Chair, which the President, during his State of the Nation address, referred to, was that IDC was going to establish a 10 billion rand fund to assist in helping companies for to job creation. So we have a grow, we call it a grow scheme, where we're putting 10 billion at prime grow E screen, saying it's grow the economy scheme. That's the term our marketing people thought it's a fancy one. Where we're saying we're making available 10 billion at prime less 3 over 5 years. So we're saying if you come to the IDC for the first 5 years, you'll be able to access a facility at prime less 3. But for you to be able to access the facility, you have to create jobs at a cost of less than $500,000 or less. So we're not making money out of that scheme. We're encouraging entrepreneurs to create jobs. We do recover the cost of funding. I think it's important that we do recover the cost of funding. I mean, the cost of doing business. But this is a deliberate attempt of us cross-subsidizing, to saying we would continue to be involved in industrial development, in creating all those new and big mega projects, which we will have, I mean, going forward. And then, but at the same time, as Mr. Murray's observation is very true, rand for rand, beach does not make as many jobs as the small one. Rand for rand, we know that. Which is why then we cross-subsidize, because we want to allow the small ones. Let's take from those good profits that we've made from the big ones and play our role into that. So that's how we balance that, so Chair. So, and it's something that we have to continually and consciously do, to say let's balance that. Make sure we create this new industrialist, but at the same time help creating, because we can't all leave it to the entrepreneurs and hope and pray that they will do it. We have to help them make sure that we all create those jobs that are so needed. So it's something that we embrace, Chair. It's something that will always be there. I mean, that's a question which we will always welcome, where we are challenged, and we have to be, to say, but you guys are making profit, and what about actually putting it into the economy? But how you measure sustainability is that you have to make some profit. But we don't. If you were to compare the returns that we expect from the investments that we make vis-a-vis the banks and others, I mean, we ask for very modest returns compared to those, because we want to make sure that it's sustainable. For an example, the UIF, where we got very relatively cheap money, we've passed it. We've just covered the cost of borrowings and the cost of impairments, and we've just passed it on. And the cost of doing business, we cover it from all the other ITC activities. So that's what the investments, Mr. Mabasa asked, the investments that we make, we make real, well, we want to make sure that we make real investments that will help the economy. We don't get involved in speculation, ma'am, if I understood your question. So we wouldn't want to do that, because then I think we would be missing that. We must have real investment. People would invest in the buildings, the equipment, the people who are working there, and we will be creating jobs in the country. That's what we always hope we want to achieve. And what informs us in terms of borrowing locally versus internationally, the level of activities talks to that to a large extent, to say let's borrow local or let's borrow international. Also, but we are sensitive that if you look at our balance sheet, which is relatively strong compared to the other development finance institutions, it must be said, but we don't want to cloud the South African market, because you also want them to have access to financing. So we look at all of those sectors. Also, is that how long do we want this money? Because we find, which is why we have this relationship with the development finance institutions, we find that they can give us 10-year money, and which is what we need for those investments. So there's a number of factors that we take into account, is where the investment would be, what's the investment client, and how many people are going out there and looking for funding in the South African economy. For example, if we were to go together with Transnet, together with Eskom, together with SSA, we might just cloud the government, we might cloud the market. So we would say rather those that need it more, today, maybe they should get it first and then we can go somewhere else. So that, those are the factors that we take in terms of whether we should borrow local or international. Yeah. So I hope we've answered all the questions that have been raised.
Would you say you are liquid now? You don't have
anything. Chair, the committee can relax, can have a good night's sleep. IDC will still be around for a long time. Okay. And we will, which is why we're committing to increase our level of activity going into the future, in spite of the fact that we would find from time to time, because we do have investments in the stock exchange, with some of those companies that we've invested in that are there, despite the turbulence there. I'll give you comfort, Chair, that we're going concerned. The government should not worry. IDC is in good standing. We are indeed the Chair.
Yeah. Any other? We're done with the finances. Thank you very much, Chair. I'll remember that. May we now get into the next presentation.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Now, looking at the operations, which we talked to the actual activities, you will see, Chair, as I indicated, in here we also have some of the examples, but we've covered them through the video, so we'll not repeat those, Chair. I might go to one or two others just to make a point, but by and large, we will not do that. The objectives and the outcomes, Chair, for us were still relevant in the year that we're reporting, and even going forward, we think they're still relevant because they talk to us, talk to even the government priorities. Now, if you look at the highlights of the activities, which in fact, Chair, which is covered in this book which we have in the annual report, for the year that we're referring to what we've reported, we approved a funding of 8.4 billion. And if you compare that with the previous years, for the South African-based investment, this is the highest over the last 5 years. In fact, I've been with IDC for almost 12 years now. I think this is the highest ever we had for the South African-based investment. And those investments in total would, if you look at the jobs that are saved and those that are created, would be about 31,300. So if we look at just all the total jobs, when those funds are invested. But also what has been something that we saw this year, which it's, we have not seen in the past, is there's an additional 8,000 which will be created through direct linkages. This talks largely to a transaction where it's a recycling transaction where you need people who are collecting some of those recycling materials. And when we look at the impact of that, we've tried to annualize it. That's the additional, that linkage. So we don't call it a direct job, but it's the linkage in the informal economy. Because we count direct jobs as a result of our approvals. Now, if you were to put in a factor to say what is the direct impact, that number, 31,000 could be more. What is also significant for us, Chair, in this year is that 97% of our investments are in the sectors that are covered by the new growth path and that's our policy action plan. So that's that. And also what is worth mentioning is that UIF bond was referred to, it is in the financials. This is a new edition. In fact, as we speak, we're talking to the UIF to go for the second round, and we've seen the impact of that, where it has helped create and save 17,000. Those 17,000 jobs are included in that 31,000, so we shouldn't double count it, but they are included in that 31,300. Also, we have seen an increase in our endeavours to assist and sustain job creation, particularly in the clothing and textile industry, where we've done it in two, there was a two-pronged approach. There's a scheme by the Department of Trade and Industry, which we administer for them, that is assisting the competitiveness scheme, which we assist the Department of Trade and Industry. But also, we have approved monies to help
the textile industry to ensure that they modernize their equipment so that they can be able to be responsive. So we've seen that to us as a highlight. And also we did in the automotive sector, we approved about 1.7 billion, that's part of that 8.4 billion, of which about R1 billion was to an OEM. And then the rest is to the component manufacturers, because we know there is also one such sector, which is the automotive sector, which was severely affected during the recession. If we were to break down that 8.4 billion which we approved, Chair, that would take you to the next slide, that's slide 12. You'd see percentage-wise, the manufacturing sector received 27%, followed by the mining value chain, and together with the infrastructure. There, that's relating mainly to the telecoms and the hospital infrastructure and the in the construction industry. The new sector that we're entering into, which is the green economy, we will see that even, I think, when we report next time, Chair, but it will depend on the decisions that are made sometime in November, we will see that green economy bar increasing more, because this was actually the first year where we've classified it as a green economy. That's largely on the solar water heaters, which we'll come back to the question that was asked on that. So this is, in Chair, the split of how the 8.4 billion was approved has been allocated to those industries. If we go to a further clarification in the next slide, slide 18, this is per province. We're looking at the provincial distribution. What is worth mentioning is that of the approvals that we made during this period, 49% was to other provinces other than Gauteng, Western Cape and KwaZulu-Natal, which we think for us is a good step, but if in the province by province, which we will do, I think there's still room for us to improve in a number of other provinces. But why we think that is a good step is, if you look at how they contribute, those provinces, the other six provinces, to the South African GDP, they contribute about 36%, but our investments were actually at 49%, so we've actually put in a bit more than how they contribute to the economy, which to us, at least in our mind, it's the right trend, because it's also a deliberate attempt. I will talk when you talk about the stakeholders, what we do, because it's a deliberate attempt for us to try and find and make sure that we identify sustainable economic, sustainable businesses which we can fund into the other provinces so that we can assist in those provinces. So those are the examples that give a split, really, in those different provinces. We still see that the three, in spite of that, now they only got 51% of our approvals, but they are still larger than the other provinces. The next slide, Chair, on slide 14, we've looked over a five-year period to say how are we doing province by province. So what we did was we looked at the provincial contribution to GDP, the provincial GDP, and vis-a-vis the IDC approvals to see where we are. I mean, in some cases, we've approved more. I mean, for an example, if you look on that slide, the first slide, on the first graph on the left, IDC approval billion, where you see the Northern Cape, the provincial GDP is low, but in the IDC approvals has been more. But in other cases, in fact, most cases, I think here what we're trying to show, Chair, is that in most cases, other than maybe in the Western Cape, we have tried to put in more money into those provinces relative to the GDP. We look at it over the five-year period in this case, as opposed to the previous one where we're looking at just one year. Chair. So those are the highlights, Chair, that we see as the IDC. We in terms of what we've achieved. And then, as I indicated, there are some case studies which we wanted to share with the committee, some of the things that we've done. I mean, the committee has seen the video, but we will. I mean, there are these ones which are documented, which I will not necessarily refer to. I mean, the solar we saw, the calcium, all of these, the chair we saw. Some of these, the committee members will be able to taste with their families and see whether indeed these are the ones. But some of the projects are still at a development stage. For an example, on slide 24, that grain field chicken, that's still in construction, but this is going to be one of the biggest chicken abattoirs we found. For us, particularly on the poultry side, as IDC, is a deliberate attempt to really increase our level of investment here, because we know we're still importing a lot of chicken, and we shouldn't. I mean, it is Nama. We should. We know how to grow chicken. We know how to cut and freeze it, and all of that. But the fact of the matter is, we still importing chicken, and we know South Africans consume a lot of chicken, be it cooked at home or in a fast food outlet. So there's a deliberate attempt, which is why we've invested so much into this particular one to increase the capacity in that. You'll see the spread. So what we've tried to do also in these, some of these examples is also when we show them, we show which province they come from, and we also have like a tick box to say, do they talk to, not all of them have all those tick boxes, but some of them have got more tick boxes than the other. Sustainable job creation, broad base, that's the ownership, replacing imports, that's the one which, and then introducing competition. So we try to make sure that as we approve these things, what outcomes that it achieve, which we want to see that we're talking about. So that's that. I mean, we also see that there's a chick shoe manufacturing on slide 32, which is creating new jobs, the labor intensive, and it's an expansionary black economic empowerment, and we're assisting an SME here, Mr. Mabasa. This one here, this is here, it's another example where we're seeing a small business to indeed expand. And then the next one on slide 33, which is at Synthicon Surgical, which is here, we're replacing imports by assisting companies in local companies to supply something that is needed in our economy, cheaper, without subsidizing this. We are not subsidizing this particular company, and it has become competitive from the fact that they've been locally based, and they've got the technology, and hopefully through this intervention, then the Department of Health can spread the other money which they were spending, or because this is now a third of what the imported product was, and then they can be able to use that money for other interventions. If you look on slide 34 there, I mean, we're assisting a company which is well established, it's been in around, but it was in the danger of closing, but because of IDC's intervention, it is still in place. I'm jumping some of this because, I mean, the committee members have seen all of this, but I just wanted to highlight, so we were highlighting some of this, which is maybe I should go to...
Can we deal with the highlights?
Yes, that's fine. Yeah,
I invite the question from the highlights. Samarin, Babuturi, Nan Sotesi, Dr. Ravi, but not a thing.
Thank you, Chair. Just a few things that I want to ask. The one is, to what extent are you looking at new developments taking place? And I'm using the example in the Western Cape where, with the finding of oil along the Namibian coast and gas, obviously the best harbour that is positioned to do maintenance of oil rigs is Saldanha Harbour. And I know that there's an emphasis and a drive to see how can that be developed. Now, we know that maintenance is highly labor intensive. So my question, because you haven't mentioned anything about what your role is into new developments, because if we it is very good if we try to do what we can more efficiently. Nothing wrong with that. It's also very good if we can develop competition in terms of what we already do. But often with a global village that we are operating in, it becomes incredibly competitive, and we need to find new competitive edges where we can operate and where we can provide a new service or a product. So that is my one question. The other one, you have mentioned about clothing, and I'm not quite sure where we will still get to that, is in your 2010 strategic plans, the document that you put your key priority areas, you've also given specific objectives and targets and strategies that you've pointed out in terms of, for instance, the clothing manufacturing. You want, for instance, I think 20% to ensure that 20% of the local consumed footwear is sourced locally, to ensure that 50% of clothing and other made of textiles is sourced locally. So I can go into, you know, all the other things that you have mentioned as well. And I would very much like the, you know, chemicals, agri industry, I can mention everything like that. I haven't heard you mention anything about how you've performed against those strategies that you've set, those targets that you've set yourself. And in the document, I don't think that you are really expressing much of that. And I think so it is, I think for us and for myself, it will be good to see you report on the objectives that you've set yourself. Which we don't really see that dominant, which you haven't talked about. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And Mr. Mare?
Chairperson, I would like to build on Mr. Mare's question about the imports, particularly with the chickens, as the CEO has alluded to say. We are importing most of the chickens, let's say, from China, and you find that those chickens are cheaper than the chickens we are producing here, and obviously because the competition, we cannot stand that, because you find that here you let's say per chicken you charge 40 rand, and then that one is about 10 rand then. Obviously, they are going to kill us. I want to check there too. How can we? I know that you said you are not funding. I mean, the subsidizing or anything. But when you are funding, do you put that in place so that there will be competition? Because obviously, if you look at our prices with the chickens locally, then compared to the import one, I want to check that. Secondly, on the auto manufacturing, the cars. I want to check here. I will make an example with the Toyota. When Japan came, it was the South Africans, they had 61%. I mean, beginning. Then eventually it went down. Now I've been told that Japan has taken over, which is supposed to be vice versa, is supposed to be gradually taking over, but you find that the foreigner is already taking over the whole company. Now, is that not putting us at a disadvantage? That's an investor coming to invest, then you find that the local one eventually is being bought out. And I want to check that what causes that. Can't we do something, or are we at a disadvantage or at an advantage that we keep South Africa ownership bigger than the foreigners? So if you can check that one. As you have said, you have been putting 1.7 billion on the on the motor industry. So I want to check that if the Japanese or the foreigners are increasing their share, how does that assist South Africa? Thanks.
So on page 11, we are expecting the creation of 19,650 full-time jobs. How many could be referred to as a decent job out of the number of given here? And by when the 8,100 jobs will be in place? And on the funding of companies which were in distress, has there ever been any step taken to investigate or monitor if the funds were utilized for the intended purpose? And the last one on page 12 about the funding the green economy. We have several departments dealing with green economy and also funding. And here we have several transactions being funded. I think it is important to know exactly what is funded so that we can detect if there is multiple funding for the same project in the name of the green economy. Because very often in government, there has never been a time when we have funds or resources in abundance. Very often the demand exceeds the supply of the funds. So it is important for us to monitor if people get according to need. It's according to need.
Thanks, ma'am. Babu Mambasa.
Thank you very much, Colin Chair. My first question is, to what degree does the IEDC see itself as a continental entity? Without going into details, because that will also help in terms of economies of scale and also the development of the continent, the byproduct spin-offs are medium-term and long-term. And do we have a huge competition from other continents in striving to occupy this African space? And then the related to that will be, to what degree is the IDC relating to higher education department, as well as science and technology, for the reason of investing and encouraging investing in areas that would grow the South African economy and the South African confidence. I mean, in terms of you spoke very eloquently. When you said we can grow chickens. Sometimes we don't do certain things simply because we don't have enough confidence, you know, we don't appreciate our strengths. So to what degree, because these two departments that I mentioned do have a role to inspire confidence so that partnership as a question. And then when you mentioned live when you mentioned chicken, it also caused my mind, when we import, not necessarily IDC but South Africans, do we also import live chicken, or we can only import frozen chicken? Because depending on what the answer is to that question, I will think there should be threats or there should be huge opportunities The last question is when we give loans to big firms, do we have amongst the conditions a condition that spells out that they must themselves contribute towards the growing one, you know, the SMMEs, cooperatives? Do we have that as a condition, as well as if we do borrow you such funds, we would want you to be more South African entrenched, you know, you must be sensitive. If you use the parts, we would appreciate if you can buy South African parts rather than importing unnecessarily. Thanks, Coach.
Thank you, Chair. First, my apologies, Chair. I was at another meeting, at the appropriations meeting, but I only finished. We had to approve a number of minutes. That's why I stayed. But,
Chair, okay, we did get your apologies.
Thank you. Madam Chair, first and foremost, the grain field chickens there, the project there, it's quite a big project. I mean, if you slaughter something like 100,000 chickens per day, I just want to know, we've got a number of companies which are listed on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. I'm talking about Rainbow Chickens, and there are a number of others. I just want to know, will this particular grain field company, is it a private concern? Is it will it have an effect on the existing market? I mean, with due respect, are we subsidizing some of these companies now, or is the playing field level? I just wanted to know whether this is, because it's important. I mean, I think there must be fair and equitable competition. And then this committee, we visited the Kucha Industrial Development Zone about, I think, 2 or 3 months ago. And what the officials told us there, that the success of this particular project depends upon the building of a new refinery there. Petro-SA is investigating the viability of that. Apparently, most of our refineries in this country are outdated, and it's not very fuel efficient when it comes to the refinement of fuel and so forth. I just wanted to know whether Petro-SA have they approached the IDC for funding in this particular project or not, because I think that can have profound consequences for the economic development of the Eastern Cape, which is a deprived, marginal deprived area. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thanks, Dr. Ravi. I'm not questions Lao as we do, but I'd also like to ask a few questions. I just wanted to check the impact of your foreign investment or foreign funding on the local economy, that is, on our own local economy in terms of jobs created. And most of companies coming into South Africa or investing in South Africa, they normally bring their own stuff. Let's say Chinese, if they come with their own stuff, the majority are their own stuff, and then they would then employ a few locals, which of course needs to be regulated, not necessarily by yourself. But I just want to find out, as you take businesses to outside South Africa, how do you ensure that there are people also from South Africa that get jobs from those investments that you're making outside? The second one, just in Africa, how many jobs would you say we have created in those countries in Africa where we have invested? I mean, if if we have contributed 10% of the industrialization of Africa, how many jobs have we created? Because really, we took it as our responsibility to assist Africa out of its underdevelopment towards the development. I'm a bit worried about, we have about 16% investment in mining value chain, you know. I'm worried that when you look at the economic outlook of South Africa, you find that we are selling jobs in the industry itself. And yet we are investing more resources into the mining. What is the challenge? I just want to understand. We seem to be putting more and more resources, but at the same time, we don't get value. We don't seem to be getting value for money in terms of jobs that are being created. We're losing more jobs instead of that. Is it because we're replacing people with machinery, or is it because the cheap labor system is no longer working? Because before, we know that we used to get people from outside South Africa or from within South Africa, the rural areas of South Africa, to come and work. And now, or is it related to the labor law? And if it's labor law, which aspect of the labor law is really affecting us? Because this is quite serious. We can't be pumping money where we don't get the value, or we don't get anything out of. We in terms of your spread again, 27% is towards manufacturing. And I think this is the government's priority. This is the government's priority. What I want to know is we have seen, I will link this one to your CTCP, I think, program, wherein we saw many of our clothing and textile factories closing up. We, in terms of your agro processing or agricultural manufacturing funding, project funding, we see most of those declining. What I want to know is what would be the reason in agriculture, for instance? I'll give you an example. Most of the clothing and textile factories are closing. That is one. Secondly, I know of, for instance, leather factories. I know it from Mpumalanga, we have few, and they closed. We have silk factories that have closed up, and also farming, not only those that are producing material, but that are doing material, but also those that are producing farming silk products also. They have closed down. Why are we letting those things, you know, disappear like that? And in as far as we're concerned, the fact is that those are, you know, areas where we can create more jobs from. And I don't think they consume that much. They don't need too much capital, for instance, in terms of also of maintenance and so forth. Why are we not focusing more on those? Because most of these are in the rural areas. Because I know one from, I think it was Northwest also, where it has closed down. We recently visited Free State also, where we were told there's a project between, you know, potential big project that has the potential of creating also more jobs between Free State and Lesotho, that is the Sandstone project. Do you know of such? If you know, what are we doing about that? Because we know that South Africa, we're not producing. You know, when you look at the sandstone products, they are products that are very durable and mostly they look very fancy after, I mean, products that are being used. But they are on the decline. And we have to, in a far as I'm concerned, a gold that is there underutilized. And we know the Sotho people are also very, very poor. That's one of the poorest countries. And that is just next to us. And I don't think we have that feel good thing to let them suffer the way they are suffering. I had the last question that I wanted to ask. But it's fine, you can answer those, Babu Kwena, and then we'll follow up with the next set of questions.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks to the members for the questions. I will not answer all the questions on my own, Chair. I will, from time to time, just ask some of my colleagues to assist. On how we have reported, I mean, because we have not reported and highlighted how we've done according to the targets or the milestones that we've achieved. I think what we'll do next time when we report, we'll probably improve on that. The targets that we've set, they go over time. It's not 1 year where we said we want to do this. They stretch over time, which we share with the community. In fact, what we will improve on that, what we can do, we can show where we are in terms of different sectors. For an example, I mean, the examples we have here, if you looked at textile, which was an example that was used, we have cases what we've done on the clothing side, we have cases what we've done on the shoes, for an example, because we are talking to those objectives that we've set, because each business unit is looking at those, and we do monitor those in terms of these are the targets that we set or the objectives that we set, where we are with 85% or 87%, whatever, what we can do. I think next time when we share, we can refer back to that, but we do recognize that we can improve on that. On new developments, Chair, we both look for making sure that the existing ones are competitive, that we expand them and all of that. We also look at new developments. But new developments in their nature, they do take time. I mean, we have some of them in the pipeline. I mean, for an example, there's a project on the titanium slab, which we've been referring to. That's a new development. That's something that is new, which we're looking at. But some of those take a little bit more time. So in the pipeline, we do look at the new developments. I mean, if you look on the green side, I'm not sure why I'm getting a feedback now. If you look on the green side, the green industries, that's largely new for us. And that's the area, even when we report next year, you see that's the area where it's growing, be it solar, be it wind, and all of those. So we are conscious of the fact that we have to continue to find new things whilst we have the others. I think it's something that we have. Maybe what we will do is next time when we report as well, we can say this is so much on new, this is so much on the saving, this is so much on the expansion, so that it's much clearer. But it's something that is there. And we're going to share
more detail on
which one.
What is this new?
Yes. Yeah. We will do that. Because we do put in an effort on that. Chair, on the chicken. I think I started the chicken debate.
But I just want to understand from questions by Mr. Marek in terms of reporting, because I found the reporting quite helpful, because some reporting is not like a 1 year, like it's indicated. It could be 3 years, 5 years reporting. From the basis of the report itself, would you say the entire report is not that adequate? Do you want them to? Because I found them, you know, they refer to a particular project that started with so much and is currently on the, you know, the year under review. That's where it stands and so forth. how far do you want it to go so that they know exactly what to end on?
Okay. Madam Chair, I think the general reporting is very good. But I think what I prefer to, if you will remember, I think it was in March last year, when we had these key priority areas for the financial year.
Yes.
There were specific key priorities set, and as I said, there's many examples where they've said that, you know, this is the percentage that we want to see jobs for instance, grow, or and that we just, in terms of reporting, know how far are they down the line in terms of those objectives. Because you can report, but you cannot necessarily, you know, address the target that you've set yourself. So I mean, you know, if hypothetically, and I'm not saying that is the case, they can report and say, yes, you know, this project is going fine, but it might be far off in terms of their own targets. Now, obviously, there can be very credible and justified reasons why you are not on track in terms of the targets that you've set. Because it's like a budget. A budget is a view into the future in terms of your plan. But reality sometimes, you know, intervenes in your plan. But at least then you know and you can report to us, because this is in terms of what they have reported to us, what they've said that the objectives and the targets of what they want to do, and from a strategic point of view. And obviously those strategic point of views must link into the government objectives. And that we can just know how far they are down the line in terms of those specific objectives.
All right. If they understand, it's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah.
They will do accordingly. But they just don't want a repetition of what is
provided. No, absolutely not.
Okay.
No, thanks, Chair, for that. Now we do. I think we can enhance. It's how we package this. We can show, because all the information that we can package it so that it does indeed talk. I think that's very helpful. Thank you, Chair, for further clarification on that. Chair, there are two questions that are related to the chickens. But we see most of the chickens actually come from Brazil. Most of the chickens, they are frozen. I'm not aware of any live ones that is imported. I'm sure there would be restrictions. I don't know, Chair. We looked at the project, in fact, that's a question I asked the project that we funded, which is indeed an observation, which is indeed a big project. I asked whether, I mean, the free range and all those that are not, but I was told it's largely a marketing thing. Because even if they're free range, I mean, the space is very small. It's called free range. But I'm not an expert in that chicken debate, Chair. So it's largely what we see is largely imported from Brazil, largely the frozen one. This project, I'm going to answer them because they are related. I think they also came from Dr. Rabi as well. The project, it is indeed sizable, but it's a deliberate attempt, because we say even with the players that we have now, we still have a large portion of the importation. I'm told we consume, as South Africans, lots of chicken. So even with these ones, still will not be a dominant player in the market as far as the chicken is concerned.
Okay,
so
I can't say we mustn't say
I think we're just a chicken loving country.
Yeah.
So it is large, but we think we have done the studies and we have seen the impact, but even with that, it will not be a dominant player in the market. And here we're dealing with farmers who've been in existence for a while. It's not people who are just starting. They've been in around, they know, because it's the farmers in the Free State area, so they know. I mean, I've seen, I've spoken to some of the farmers myself personally. I mean, it's still construction. It's going to be a major. What we like about this is the involvement of the community around as well, which is, I think, it's something that we see as one thing. But with all businesses, Chair, I mean, we're not guaranteeing that it will be a success 100%. They'll have challenges. I mean, we have funded another chicken operation in Brent. It's going through challenges, but it's a management issue more than the fact that there's no demand for chicken, which we're sorting that out. So we have that experience. I mean, there's also one outside of South Africa, which we have in Namibia, which is also a chicken operation, which you also funding. So we're learning from some of those experiences that we have. So it will bring competition, but we think it will not damage the industry. That's on the chicken. On the auto manufacturing, Christa, will you address that there's a question on the decent jobs, Chair. I said we count direct jobs, so I don't think we've defined necessarily whether it's decent or not. But what we do is we count direct actual jobs that happen. The 8,100 we've highlighted. That's why we specifically highlighted them, because you can't say those are necessarily permanent jobs, in that there we're looking at the people that are collecting for items to be recycled. That's why we said it's a linkage in the informal sector. But they said 1,000 jobs, those are the actual jobs that are happening, which you will know will be sustainable. So for us, that's important that those jobs are around. So that's the sustainability. And of course, remember, it's 19,650, but the others, the jobs, the actual jobs that we have saved. So I think if you were to extend that to whether they're decent or not, in our opinion, they would qualify those jobs as decent, because people work there and it's not a temporary job that comes and goes. So that's it. Obviously, the speed in which those jobs actually materialize is related to the speed in which the money goes into the economy. So the sustainability for us is very, very important. The distress, there's a couple of distress questions which are related, Chair. And in fact, some of those questions, I think they came from your questions as well. When through the discussion we had with the different players, government, business, and we came up with 6.1 billion, if the committee would remember, to assist companies that are in distress. That was a deliberate attempt by ITC, after having engaged with government and all the other players, to say we make this facility available to assist companies that are experiencing difficulties, and we'll get existing companies. So we do have a unit that monitors this, and we have mixed results. So we try and ensure that we check up our monitoring process, so that because when we say we give you 5 million rand to buy equipment, we need to be comfortable that you indeed buying equipment. Not that the equipment that you need for the business, you can buy something else. So we have a post monitoring department that continues to do that. It's got mixed results. Sometimes somebody buys the equipment, but and then maybe buys not. We have had one or two cases where they've bought second-hand instead of newer. So that's why we're tightening up on those. Fortunately, it's not widespread, but we're tightening up on those processes, because we want to make sure that the money is used for what it's intended to do. So even in some of these companies that are in distress, coming back to the distress companies, we do monitor that. But I know we have mixed results, but it's something that we continue to do. So,
just on that, I think we reported, I think it was last year, that out of the companies we visited that were really on in distress, we realized that most of them, they were not affected necessarily by the recession. It was due to bad administration. They didn't have the management skills, financial skills. Others, it was because it's a family affair and they were not able. But then IDC decided to assist them, which was good. But the challenge is that they are not being monitored. And we stressed on the monitoring aspect, that unless you do so, we'll still see many companies, falling. So I don't know how far have you done, because I'm hearing now you saying again that you're going to be putting again more emphasis on monitoring. I know for the fact that the company we visited in Mpumalanga, New York, that deal is not working very well, especially the black empowerment aspect. What are the challenges? First, we do not want to see, and we also went to some, it was as a result of, the management not wanting to accommodate, unions, so working together with the unions and so forth, as a result. It's more to do with the management rather than the real running of the company. And how does, we did ask a question, how does then IDC come to the to a conclusion that this really needs to be assisted, you know, because you weigh certain things, and some of them we felt really this needed not to be assisted, but because there are companies that are very important to the economy, then we thought maybe monitoring would assist them to grow. Would you also, that's a follow-up to what you just responded to now.
Yes, Chair. When you in business, there's always room for improvement. When I said we need to improve our monitoring, I did not mean that we're not doing it. In fact, if you look at one of the areas where we've grown as IDC in the department, the post-investment monitoring department, that's the biggest one in terms of growth, because it's talking to us, going and monitoring and making sure that there are people who visit those companies, firstly to see that the money is being used for what it's intended to, but also to be proactive to say what else will that company need, and how is the environment in which it finds itself affecting. So that part is one part which we will continue to improve, but that's the part where we have put in resources. On the young team, but Chair, we'd have to come back to you and actually get the status, but the information I have now is that one of the reasons why it is discussed was really the share price, but we will let's go back and find where the status is so that we can respond to that in particular, because as you indicated, you went and then you've come up with other observations. Where
can we also get from others that we visited and reported on? Because I think when you say monitoring will increase, the impact is most important, because that's how you see whether you're succeeding or not.
There was a question around specifically automotive manufacturing and whether there's an advantage of South African ownership versus foreign ownership. I think if you look at the automotive manufacturing industry, it really relies on a lot of development and research work that goes in upfront before you start making.
Well, okay, is really not okay. So if we have a lot of noise again, it just destabilizes the people who are responding. Can we have order? Thank you. This pressure doesn't help.
So as I said, in the OEM industry, so that's the assemblers, there's a lot of research and development that goes into a car before they can start making it, and I think that's where there are advantages of having linkages to the parent company, the overseas parent company, because you've got access to that technology, you've got access to the tooling, you've got access to the development and design work that's happened up front. And in South Africa, what we're trying to do is to bring a lot more of the component manufacturers to invest locally. And even there, it's not an issue around the ownership, but it's bringing the jobs to South Africa. Instead of importing a component, rather have 50 people employed to make that component. And that is the way that the incentives around the industry are designed to bring the component manufacturing to the country.
Chair, there was a question on Saldana and what we're doing, which I would ask our regional officer, regional manager rather. Sorry, I'm demoting you here now. The regional manager to respond.
All right, thanks, Chair. I think this question was coming from Mr. Mare. And the question was, how close is the IDC to the developments that are taking place in the West Coast? I think what I can actually say that we've taken a very keen interest to participate in the initiatives that are taking place now in the West Coast, especially for oil and gas. The oil and gas sector, I think the focus will be much more on the services, sort of a related sort of industry to the oil and gas, because of the potential of the West Coast. And there's currently an IDZ, sort of a feasibility study that is taking place. I think the announcement will be made, or the report will be presented in November. And then once that happens, everyone is hoping that once it is approved, it's going to accelerate quite a lot of economic activity in the area. And IDC will be central to that. I think parallel to that, we are not waiting for that report. On the manufacturing front, we are still looking at projects that we can be able to fund in order to be able to provide with its components for the oil and gas industry. There's one particular project that we're working on now where it involves the Malaysian sort of an investor, and it is for the manufacture of a high pressure vessel, and is currently at the due diligence stage. So we are not waiting for the feasibility study to happen. And that's what I can report at this stage. I think also with the DDI as well, as you know, that the oil and gas industry was not one of the identified sort of sectors. And I think Minister Rob Davis now is actually, after the situation from the provincial government, the Western Cape, has actually taken the oil and gas as one of the growth sectors that we should actually look at.
Thanks, Lisa. The question was by Dr. Rabi. There was one also on the Kuha Development Zone. We are, that project Mtombo, I think it is called. We are working with Petro SA. As you see in the challenge, one of the slides we have. We are engaging with government so that government makes that decision. I think there's already two big projects. It's Project Mafuta, which is in the Waterberg, and these are some of the big ones. But we are indeed engaging with them because we're looking at the size. I think where we are is in terms of how big this project should be, because you're right. I mean, that area needs that big project as an anchor for real development to happen. So we are close to that. There's questions on the continent, which I would ask Nawo to talk about how we deal with themselves and also the jobs that we've created from this. That Nawo was what.
Thank you. Just on the number of jobs, as an answer direct to the first to that question, there are 2,000 jobs that were created from the investments that we did last year. In the rest of the continent, in various projects, as we reported on. And there was another 2,000, yes. There was another question about whether we have ASA. I think I could only interpret this, do we have a South African bias when we go on to the rest of the continent in investments? Some of us will correct me if I'm wrong. But that, yes, and one of the things that we report, that we insist on, that we put as conditions or undertakings, is that firstly, it must be, whenever we invest in the rest of the continent, there must be a South African benefit, if I can call it that. Whether there's exports of goods and services from South Africa to the rest of the continent. And as much as we want to encourage trade and everything else, but we're saying firstly that there must be some South African benefit in all of that. And to your point, yes, we do want to go to the continent, take it very, we consider that very serious, simply not just from a relationship between ourselves and the rest of the neighbors and continents. There are 1 billion people, almost a billion people. That's a huge market for South African goods and services. When, in terms of our strategies, we invest, as you said, as we may have reported earlier, that we invest from Cape to Cairo. So we are a continental entity. We do count the jobs.
The jobs created in the country
outside. We haven't actually calculated that, but I suppose we could when. Because remember, when we take what we call exports, if for instance, a South African company is going out into the rest of the continent. If the jobs are created here, we will count them because they're South African jobs. So you may find that some of the jobs that we are counting are actually jobs created here, but they are within the 31,300. But I think we haven't actually done an exercise, Krista, of actually saying which, how many, perhaps maybe to your point about some other countries, how many, how much have we exported labor? Is that what the question is? We haven't counted.
We haven't.
I don't think we've counted how many, how much labor we've exported. If I could put it in there. Yeah, but meaning how many people have moved out of
our own companies?
Yes. No, our own companies go and we follow them. We will follow them to invest there. We will export some of their services and goods, etc., etc. But whether how many people have gone with them into that country. That's the part that we need. Yes, I think we could check that.
There's a question on the relationships we have with the Department of Higher Education and that of Science and Technology. I think we have engaged with Science and Technology through one of the agencies, in particular TIA. But on the higher education, no. Our involvement has been largely with the institutions on the higher education. Of course, we have a venture capital unit as well, amongst other things, where we partner with the different universities for technology and all of that. So we also, with this program that we have, the Nguni Kettle, for an example, we work with universities as well. So we have that, but not necessarily with the department, we haven't. But the science and technology we have, because they have abilities on assisting us. So that's really where we have had that attention. We do provide, I mean, that's largely through, I would call it that, maybe that's a CSI, NEO, where we provide bursaries and so that we really help. In fact, in proportion, if you look at our size, relative to the investments that we make out in terms of bursaries and all of that, I mean, relatively, I think we do more than what other companies would do. Of course, we want to make sure that we help in the development of the college's education for the higher institutions. And also, we do support them with different interventions, but those are CSI, really. So as a Department of Education, no, we don't have any specific intervention. There was a question which was asked in terms of by the chair. On the mining, the concern to say this sector is losing jobs. Why do we continue, and what's the reason for that? It's a number of reasons. It also depends on the minerals that you dig. You find that gold becomes more and more difficult because you go deeper and deeper, and as the resource depletes, because all of these are depleting resources, it becomes difficult to dig. So that means then you find the level of activity on gold and will reduce. That's why then you look at other countries, for an example, for other resources which are not as deep as ours, because the deeper you are, the more dangerous it becomes, and it becomes more costly. But also it depends also on the demand. I mean, if you look, for an example, on iron ore, I mean, which the demand is still high, which is why you see Kumba doing so well. But also you look at chrome, there's lots of opportunities. We also invested in those, and there's growth areas in those, and that provides a good opportunity. If you look at the Kalahari area as well, there's a number of projects that are coming up. We're also involved in one of those, which will create good opportunities. In fact, Dr. Rabi, that will have, we are planning to have a smelter in Kuha as well to support that manganese that will be coming in from Kalahari. So there's a nice project that will happen. Which in future will also assist the Kuha area, because we've already committed to building a smelter in the Kuha area. We will continue to invest in the mining chair because we want to also benefit. You know, we've always been easy for us to dig, wash, and export. So we're looking in line with government practice. Let's try and benefit, because it's not only adding value, but it's also developing the skills that you need in the beneficiation. So we're doing it in conjunction with that. Which is why we're building a smelter, for an example. So, but different minerals will determine how far down do you benefit, because that will be informed by it. But we still have resources as a country, and I think it's important that we continue to make use of what nature has given us in a responsible way. If you look at the phosphate rock, I mean, we still have a good resource of phosphate rock. We do that through Fosco, which is a company we own 69%, which ultimately makes the fertilizer, and the quality of the phosphate rock that we have is actually good. But also we have chrome, we have manganese and all of those. So as much as it's not an easy industry, but it still provides opportunities for us to get into more, particularly when we look at the beneficiation side. The manufacturing, there's a question on the manufacturing side, Chem. The observation is spot on. It is the one that has suffered a lot, particularly during this recession. If you look relative to the others, where we've put in more into that, there's an effort for us to do more, which is why you've seen the prospects where, in fact, since February, we've gone to every province where we've had conversations with business to try and find opportunities, really try and stimulate to say what is it that we can do in those particular provinces so that we can ensure that we stimulate the manufacturing side, because that's where we've felt the hit hard from the recession. There was a specific question on sandstone products. I don't have an answer. Maybe we'll do some work. I'm not aware of why is it not being developed. Why are we not doing anything there? I don't have that specific answer.
Yeah, actually, the MSC there was saying they really are not getting good, or either they don't have a good relationship with you in terms of but the sandstone management project that they feel can contribute a lot, and there's also a gas mining opportunity in the Free State. I think it's around municipalities. Method that you know better those municipalities according to the new demarcation. Yeah, but he spoke of a very high potential of gas mining within the province. And to me, it's related to the question that Dr. Ravi raised, for instance. And when you talk mining beneficiation also, it comes in. And then he also spoke of the mining, the water, underwater, the water that has some substance there that is has health benefits, I guess, that it's something that to be looked at, and also the potential of creating more jobs for the people of the Free State. And I think if perhaps you link with the department and try to talk to them, because they spoke of a very good project that are in the pipeline, but they do not have any financing for such.
Thank you, Chair. In fact, I will follow up with the MEC for Economic Affairs, because I had a meeting with him on Monday in terms of what we can do in the Free State, because we were in the Free State. So, but I'll follow up on these ones. Yeah, this one was not mentioned in that. So there were two questions which Mr. Ntuli asked right at the beginning. On the switches, I think we did address that, to say we as IGC are not subsidizing, but we know the cost is a thing. So for us, it was comfort to say here we can have a South African manufactured product that is competitive. So to us, it talks to how competitive that product is. I'm not aware of any subsidies that they are getting. I'm looking at my team. And then there was a question on the solar heaters. To say in other provinces they are asked to pay and others not. I think we will go back and check, because that's my understanding, is that the government subsidy which we're working with those partners, I am not aware of other provinces as they expected to pay and others. So I think it would be unfair for me to try and respond. I don't think whenever, but we will check with even with our green unit to see whether is that practice, what informs it and why, and then we can through the secretary give a feedback.
I indicated earlier on that if you feel the response to your question is not adequate, immediately get in so that you don't. If you have follow up, new ones, or these are new questions.
No, actually, one person was not responded
to. Oh, okay. Can you come?
That is about the green economy. The statement here that says several transactions were funded, and the request was to specify those transactions. That is page 12.
Oh. No, no, I'll talk about it.
That's the second.
No, we need
to say a new one. It's a new one, okay. Let's finish the follow ups and then we'll move to the new one. Okay.
Apologies, Mr. The project which we have as an example here, the Solar Academy, that's one such project. Which other is that? Yeah, there's two. There's one on page 17 and one on page 19. Those are the two projects that are on the green economy. Yes, yeah, in the slide copies. So this is the one that we refer to in the slide copies, is slide 17, the Solar Academy Sub-Saharan Africa, and then the SA Calcium Carbide. Yes, those are the new ones. Those are the ones we're referring to this year. Okay, thank you. Apologies for missing the apologies.
Okay.
Could we take, on behalf of the chair in direction, could we take the second round of questions? Maybe what we should do is to start this side. Rabuntuli, let me note you. And Me, you want to note him? And shall I note you? So let me note myself. Yeah, thanks. When you presented last time, there was a promise to say that this financial year you'll be able to create 25,000 jobs. I can see there you've got 31, but some which were retained. I want to check whether did you meet the target when you're presenting to us. I want to check whether did you meet the target of 25,000 jobs to be created by March 2011. I want to check that and to build on that one. Are you confident, or can you tell us whether you'll meet the target, this 5 million job by 2020? Is it possible to tell us that your share, you target that by that time you'll be having, you'll be created so many jobs, because it is a million dollar question whether we'll be able to. So we want to find out from the IDC. Are you confident that you'll be able to? And during the hearings, we had Mkwena. You remember that Mutaka Mkwena Chemicals. He was saying that he was giving the funding which was not helping him. Then we requested the IDC to check on that, and you promised that you'll be able to follow that up. I wanted to check whether Gwen was assisted at last. Thank you.
Thanks, Robert Dooley. Some of the questions noting the background from which we come, as a country, to what degree does the IDC help in carrying out feasibility studies throughout South Africa, especially in rural areas, where the objective could be to say, in this region, although that will be done in conjunction with, for an example, the Department of Agriculture, instead of planting maize, let's all plant sunflowers, because
because so that funding relates to what will realistically pay off. So that where you think this is not going to fly, you can from your side say this is not worth funding because it will be misdirected funding. And I read about 2 days ago that in the hotel and hospitality area where we thought triple BEE is growing, it was articulated that it only grows in the very small, tiny areas, a small bread and breakfast room. But when we come to real hospitality areas, be it hotels, be it big restaurants, we're still going down in terms of the triple BEE as a criteria. So I'm posing this question so that when feasibility study is done, it could also relate to that, you know, if possible. But where we are giving out loans, I know that other departments would also look at other criteria, but do you also check a criteria of people with disabilities to say, yes, we are giving you this loan, but speak about your profile and in challenging them so that, you know, you push them into trying to satisfy that area, because as a country, we are struggling in terms of satisfying that niche. When I spoke about bazaaries, it was not my step, but when I spoke about the higher education, your relationship with higher education, I'm taking it from the beneficiation angle, wherein you have an interest. But that should also, the higher education department should similarly also have an interest, so that, you know, there is a symmetrical growth in that. So that's why maybe you should explore if that relationship is not worth pursuing. The last, in Orlando East, Mdeni, Dobsonville, industrial areas, are you satisfied that you are making adequate investment in those areas? But I'm mentioning these three. We should be having their sisters or their brothers throughout the country. What would be your comment on that? Because if we do well in that, those are the people that are already used to industry life. Those are people that already have the basics. Those are the people that should help us to close this gap between historically excluded and those that have always been in that. The chicken. Thanks for having brought up. But if we, in other words, should I understand that all the live chicken is a product of South Africa? And if it is so, then it means, shouldn't that be an area where job creation is further enhanced? But where also marketing and education goes a long way, because that's where science and technology and health also come in. We were told much about the chicken that has been frozen for over 2 years, 3 years,
know, and then it's taken back to be injected, to be resourced. If we compare that chicken with a live chicken which I chase and it's slaughtered, and then it also has this soup, you know, where... So, in conjunction with those two departments, health and science and technology and yourself, isn't that an area worth pursuing? So that if we think live chickens still have a good space, that message be well articulated, and with investment going a little bit more seriously into that. Thanks, we were taking the last round, and it's now over to you for two things. The first one, to pose your question, and then to then continue sharing.
Thank you. I don't know who else has raised an interest okay. Come in and then answer this.
I wanted to check you. I remember last time when they were presenting, they spoke about the feasibility study which is taking place about the green economy. I think it's about $54 million which was put there for that feasibility study. Now I want to check how far with that the green economy and that feasibility study. Last feature is the textile. I know that we did touch that question, but like in Newcastle, where we found that they are closing down, and when we check, they are saying that no, it's useless to exist, because the incoming, the material from overseas they are so cheap in such a way that they are the competition is it's not fair. One of them told me that what they think is just to order these, particularly the t-shirts and all that, is to order them as they are, because they are so cheap that when you sell it here, it's times two or times three. So you are saying that it's better to order these t-shirts, and then when they are here, you just put the label, and it's much cheaper. You just add, you put the label to keep the workers, so that as if they are still working there, because to manufacture in South Africa is so expensive that you are nowhere. You cannot compete with the foreign. Now I want to check that why is it so expensive to do business in South Africa? Thanks.
Thank you.
You've mentioned about the your profit initially from the Mosul smelter in Mozambique, and I think about your strategy that you intend, doing the same in Kucha, also in terms of investment in a smelter. To what extent have you discounted a possible lower return on your investment in Mosul based on the pressure of electricity costs to them? Have you done any calculations in that? Because currently we know that there's huge pressure on Eskom not to supply electricity to Mosul at the current rate compared to South African companies, and obviously that contributed to your your profit there.
Okay. My last question is on the motion picture unit. I think this is one area that really needs seriously the transformation. What are we doing to encourage the previously disadvantaged? And I just want to find out whether are you in link with you know, the schools that are producing such a capacity. For instance, their learners. I know VES is very good at that. Whether are you encouraging the previously disadvantaged whenever they come, because they do register, but the problem is that they are not really getting it. We have School of Arts, we know that it's there, we have AFDA, we have all those institutions that are helping these youngsters. But coming out, they are forced to join, you know, the previously advantaged, you know, group or institution, even after they qualify. How do we ensure that we assist them to grow and to really expand on their own instead of relying on the previously advantaged? Companies or so. I can see you have a lot of money also towards that. Can you perhaps share with us as to how then can they access that? I know the Deputy Minister in the trade and industry is passionate about that and is working on that, but I'm not too sure whether we are doing sufficient or enough to encourage.
Thank you, Chair, for those questions. Like I did last time, I will also ask some of my colleagues to help me. The question on the textile industries, which I will ask the KDD to respond to what the drivers are and why are we that. While she's thinking about that, they will ask. I will try and answer some of the other questions. I think some of the questions were tough. I see Christo is coughing. No, he's got the sense of humor. There was a question on the targets of the jobs. How have we done? The target was 25. That included both saved and new. So we have met the target because we've done 31,000. If you look at the new, that in that target it was 19,000. We've done 19,650. For the safe, it was 5,400. We did 11. So we did meet both targets as far as what we had set there. But there was linked to that was the question to say, are we going to meet the new targets going forward? Chair, that will depend. When we set the targets, we think the environment is behaving in a certain way, and we know sometimes the environment does it. In the prospects, you will see we have a slide that says challenges where we will talk about some of the things that we see in our environment which might have an impact, a direct impact that we are not able to meet some of those. I think also we did, in the past, the committee did ask us to say, what other challenges do you guys see? I mean, because we know it, and not everything is smooth, and we've highlighted some of those, which we will talk to them. There was a question on Mr. Mukwena, Chair, which Lizo will respond to, so whilst he is also preparing. On the feasibility studies, Chair, we're working. One of the reasons why we are now present in all the provinces is to work with the provinces, understand their PGDS or their growth strategies. So we're working with them, but also over and above that, we're working with the entrepreneurs in terms of assisting on the feasibility studies. For example, if somebody wants to put in a project, so we would put in money on the feasibility study to understand the drivers and the markets and the technical abilities, and also that whether it would work in that area or not. So there is an interaction with the provinces, but as with most things, I think we can improve. In fact, the roadshows, which is why we did them with the entrepreneurs, the number of points
were raised where either the provincial government or the national government or even IDC can improve, and we are incorporating in those. And that will also talk to say where is the best product, where should it be. I mean, an example was made to say maybe sunflower should be here and not necessarily that particular area, but we do look into that. The question on people with disability, let me go, but there's a question which was on hospitality on the BBBE before I come to the people with disability. As part of our normal due diligence process, Chair, we do ask of all the companies that we fund that they must respect the laws of the land, and where they have to increase the level of BEE, that's one of the conditions that we say. We say you have to be compliant with all the laws, including the level of BEE. So that's a given that people must really access this. And I think, as I answered, if I remember, I think we didn't answer specifically in one of the other questions. So that's one of the conditions that we have. Also, that talks, I mean, if you look at that whole scorecard, there's an element that talks about entrepreneur development. I think that was a question which we didn't answer adequately, actually. To say, when we give money to some of these big businesses, how do we encourage them to ensure that they help the small ones? Because in the scorecard, there's a portion that talks about enterprise development. And we engage with the businesses to say, one of the other ways of increasing your compliance in the BEE is to do work on the enterprise development. I know the NEF is also doing a lot of work there to say, in fact, some of the companies where you find it difficult, give us the money that you've allocated to that, and then we will help you to find some of those small businesses and actually find them. The NEF is actually leading in this, because it's primarily driving the BEE. But we also encourage our businesses some of these big companies to deal with it. On the people with disabilities, Chair, it's a bit of a difficult one, because we had 2.5 years ago, we put in 50 million rand to encourage people with disabilities. In fact, we launched a whole scheme, we call it the Transformation Entrepreneurial Scheme, of about a billion rand, of which 400 million was for women, companies that are controlled and or owned and run by women. And then we had about 500 million for communities and the employees. And then we had 50 million for people with disabilities, where we promoted it, we planted it to say, let's look at companies that are controlled and rather people with disabilities. But for 2.5 years, after marketing and all of that, we never got any take-up, not even one transaction, which is a bit of a disappointment. We looked at our marketing. So we note the question that Mr. Mabasa is raised, but I must say we have not made as much progress. In my life at the IDC, where companies that were controlled by people with disabilities, there's only about two that I'm aware of which have been controlled. One was Betling, which we helped, but the other one was fine. So I think that's one area which we have not. There would be, there might be in some of the companies, but I mean there wouldn't be that significant. So that's one area.
That should be part of your PMJS international manager.
Yes.
Area of focus. They must ensure that they give you, companies with people with disabilities.
So we would look at it. There's a question, Chair, which on the industrial parks, which Mr. Mabasa has asked. In fact, this question, because it's a follow-up to a specific question which the Chair had the last time we did the annual report on the Cabo Queen as well, where there was an industrial park. I hope the Chairman still remembers Cabo Queen. So I will ask him, because we've done what we did at the back of that, because the question was, what are we doing at Cabo Queen Industrial Park? So what we did is, we did a bigger scale. We say, let's look at all the industrial parks and see what can be done. So now we would respond in terms of where we are, what we are doing. And we are talking to some of the players there. So, but first, before now, let me ask Lizo to talk about Mr. Mukwena.
I think the question was coming from Honourable Member Duli.
I think two submissions were made during the public hearing, if you remember, last year. Right? And Ms. Nsidi
and who run the steers in Mlazi, and Mr. Makwena from Kashiko Kenzo. In Sibi's case, we settled on that one, we resolved the case with her, and subsequent to that, she was released from the surety ship that she signed with the IDC. The only thing that we didn't agree to was that we cannot get involved between the dispute between herself and the landlord. All right? She had to resolve that herself. All right? But in terms of the IDC facility, we settled on that one. I think the biggest issue with Mr. Makwena was that he said that IDC gave him a wrong sort of a facility. Right. I think that was not true. I think at that time, the revolving facility that was given to Mr. Makwena was the most appropriate sort of instrument to fund his business. The reason why his business battled at that time, he lost his biggest contract, which was with the correctional services. That was the main reason. I think there's been a lot of communication between IDC and Mr. Makwena, and there has been quite a lot of non-performance from his side, making promises and then not fulfilling those promises. And the last time that I could check, he spoke to me personally. I asked him to make a settlement, to make an offer for a settlement to the IDC, of which he made that offer. Then IDC sent it back to him to ask him to review the settlement that he made. And now, I think Mr. Makwena, the last time that I heard from the account manager that is handling the case was that Mr. Makwena has since not come back to the IDC. What I can do now, I need to check the final status of the case, and then I can communicate to the chairman's office through pilot to give the final status on that case. That's what I can report at this stage.
Yeah,
okay. Thank you. It is true that our local clothing and textile industry is really under pressure, and it's because of being uncompetitive compared to its peers, particularly from Asia, China, for instance. And it's mainly due to the cost of doing business. The cost, the local players have indicated that the cost of doing business here is very high relative to the counterparts in Asia. And it's Chinese, for instance, they have low cost of labor, and the other thing is that they have hidden subsidies that enable them to really be competitive compared to us. And that's mainly why they because of trade liberalization, that's why they can seek markets anywhere, and even here in South Africa, and they can penetrate the market and sell here at very low prices, driving our local players out of the market.
Yeah, I'd like to check that as the IDC, as you are supporting the textile industry, how do you pass that one? Because if you say you are helping this textile industry, and then they set a discrepancy that China will keep on flooding, then you helping on what? I mean, what is the impact of that? That's what I want to find out. How do you match that? Thanks.
I think we'll ask that question to the regulator when we meet with them from tomorrow. It's a bit unfair because that's not their area of jurisdiction. Okay. I'm expecting them to work together like we have previously requested. And perhaps they can, Bamkrina, you can share with us as to how far you're working together, because this silo kind of working is not also helpful for us as a country in many aspects. If you can venture into this, please do assist Babu. Not only Babu Ntuli, but all of us, because we all have interest in that.
Thanks, Chair. In fact, we are, because the Kennedy has mentioned one part, but the other part has been the issue of illegal imports, where people have either under-declared or falsely declared what they're importing, which has also contributed. And we've engaged
through CDD, where we've talked even to SARS, which is why you'd see some of those cases which have been publicized, where you see people saying they've got toys, or they've got something else and all of that. So there's that interest as far as on that regulatory side. But also what we've done, where we're working with the Department of Trade and Industry, which we looked at the CTC competitiveness program, where we say we found that some of the companies, because they're old, they're using old technology, even their layouts in the factories, makes them just being inefficient. Maybe there's too much handling of the product and all of that. So DTI came up with a scheme just to look at, and we appointed, because we administer the scheme on their behalf, where we appointed experts and consultants to help them just to look at the layout of the product so that you reduce the number of handlings, and also it makes it more efficient in terms of people, how they would work with the product. I visited the factory in Cape Town during our roadshows, where we've seen the impact really of that intervention, where the layout was such that the product will take longer, and then just the layout. And also then, in addition to that, what we do is we put in money for new equipment. Sometimes the equipment is just too old, and then we put in money for new equipment, so that then you have got the latest equipment, and then you can compete. In addition to that, what the clothing and textile unit is doing is talking to the retailers now, to say to the retailers, okay, you guys are procuring so much, you're importing so much, what do you need from the South African company so that you can help? And that we've seen is actually starting to bear fruits now, where you see some of these companies, through that engagement now, we will see some of the orders would be coming into it. So there's that intervention from us, because we need the retailers, because it's those people that would buy from it. So we're putting in a lot of effort, and the reception has been good, where we engage with the retailers. So that, but the policing is something that has to continue, and we have engaged with that, because the issue of illegal imports has been a challenge.
Okay. I would think that would be part of the mesh entity's responsibility also, because in terms of your the grant, I think it was 100 million or 300 million that you give to this company as part of it's a grant for various activities, especially administrative capacity. Why don't you perhaps look at those issues of machinery and all those things, so that it becomes automatic, the condition that you put along the grant itself? Because that would sort of help them to resuscitate and to sustain at the same time.
May I respond?
Okay.
Yes. Okay. That's the approach. So as we look at the grant that would come from the DTI, we administer it on behalf of the DTI. So we also look at maybe then, do you need new equipment? So we do it, we don't just do one and just leave it at that, because it might just, in other cases, all they need is just the layout. Maybe the machines are fine and whatever, but in other cases, then we do it in conjunction.
Yeah, I'm just asking out of curiosity, the concern raised by Member Mkhulu, that what does the marketing and corporate managers do to discourage that practice? For stuff that is sold expensively in the country, but when you order from outside, when you import, it becomes cheaper. What do you do to discourage the practice?
Is the member asking whether the IDC, from a marketing point of view, whether we do anything to discourage people from buying dumped goods? Oh, I see. No, it's something that you could do, perhaps, member. I take note of that. That perhaps in our engagement and a relationship building, to sort of like, please do not buy this. But I think the challenge is that it's not that. It's non-IDC clients who are. Who are either dumping or importing illegally, or I do not think we have in our books at this point, and if they are, they'll be in trouble. But we do not have clients who are importing illegally. But I note your point that perhaps maybe a South Africa incorporated between ourselves and maybe Brand South Africa and everybody else, we should have something that says proudly South African or buy South African, or and we will participate in that. There was a question as well, I think it came from the chair,
about what are we doing in the media space, in the media business unit, and whether there are any opportunities for us to assist, firstly, individuals at secondary level or at BE level. As part of our, as the CEO has said, whenever we fund anybody, we always ask about their BE status, and that's one of the conditions that we put in. So that's the first part. And one of the things is that we work very closely with the National Film and Video Foundation. I used to sit on that council just to make sure that the IDC and the National Film Foundation work very close together. So for 6 years until the beginning of this year, I used to sit on the board of that council to make sure that whatever comes through the Film Foundation through the Department of Arts and Culture also talks to what we are supposed to be doing, and we actually have a cohesive strategy as a country for media. The OAFCA and the VET and the other institutions, some small and some large, that do teach media and film and filmmaking. We work very closely with them to the extent that we work through the Film Foundation. But to the extent that we invest in those companies, we always ensure or ask that they must be BE compliant, shall I say. Individuals, ma'am, it's an interesting one about whether individuals who come out of school can actually do anything out of media and out of their skills that they have they have from the institution. It's a very difficult one because South Africa is a consumer market is very small. But you will see that from our intentions in the business in the media unit is that we have found that South Africans actually consume their own stories better. They appreciate their own story better, but it's an opportunity that the business unit is pursuing to encourage our filmmakers, our students, and those people who come out of these industries to actually tell our stories, and therefore, hopefully, as a community, we can consume that media more. But it is a very challenging market. That's making us feel. In terms of industrial hubs, this was another one. The one that the CEO discussed 2 years ago. We've done a study. We have identified where the challenges are. As much as that previously, we did not necessarily see how best we can intervene because IDC funds per project. But then we have realized that these industrial parks are actually a way to encourage or to leverage what would have been dead assets. We have a lot of buildings and infrastructure that's sitting there that is not doing anything. So we needed to have a direct intervention. My division and I are actually going to EXCO as a mandate. You actually require. We've done the study. We've scoped it sort of countrywide. Say, where are these hubs? Because they come as a part. They come from old history. So there's Okapokwene, there's Soweto. You mentioned that. So there are a whole lot of industrial parks with different challenges, shall I say. But to that point, we are going to go and get a proactive intervention, meaning this is now us going into those institutions. Some of them need refurbishing. I think Kwabukwenu as a start needs required refurbishing. Others need new realignment of purpose. We now have new industries. So if you have a new industry, as in the green industry, you probably might want to have them doing something along those that value chain rather than doing things of old. Some of them require that we talk to partners and find ways and means of using their enterprise development objectives as per the DTI codes to get into those. But as we say, ma'am, when we report again in the new year, we will be able to tell you which one is working better. But now we're going directly into the hub, not via others, not via private sector. We now have to do it.
Thanks, no. On just maybe the last point on this industrial park. If we look at the Kwabukwenu one in particular, I think that one is a bit more advanced because now we know what needs to be done. So particularly, it's largely refurbishment. So I think after that interaction with the executive committee, it will be probably one of the first ones we should do. But it was important for us to look at all of them because there's a number of them. There's lots of them all over, and some of them are in a state which is almost a disrepair. And to come up with a strategic approach in terms of how best we would do that. And I must thank the committee for having raised it because it made us actually go back and think in terms of what we could do. And there was a question. Well, there's another question on the chickens. I'm not sure how I address that. Baba Mabasa, the ones that we chase probably they are freer than the free range chickens. I'm not sure. Well. Us having invested in this big one is really to try and reduce that importation. And Hopefully, we think it should make a dent. And involving the communities is one part which assists, which is why we like that one. I think it's in the Free State. So the I think there would always be room for the homegrown chickens, I would say. But how one stimulates it? Maybe what we will, maybe I ask the chair when they engage with the Kula and Samba to see how can they play that role, because that's a bit micro side of the business, and I think they'll probably be more experts than us to do that, because we might not just do it. There was a question on the impact on the electricity of the big trucks. I'm really rephrasing that. I thought that's the gist of the question, if I'm not the member would have it. If you look at Mozal in particular, it was built in the business plan to say the electricity started the development at a development price, because you want to give the project an opportunity, and when it's matured, the electricity price will increase to do it. So that's built in the business case. So it will be able to bear that. Naturally, it will put pressure on the returns of the business itself, but it's built in that it will be able to accommodate. So it's built in. As long as those increases are within what was agreed with it, because naturally it becomes difficult to get then if there's a complete revise of that business case, then one will have to see the impact of that. But in terms of the initial one, it was built that the electricity price will increase. Naturally the manganese smelter that we're planning to build in Kuha will take into account, because we do understand that some of these big projects are indeed electricity hungry. I mean, when they start, so some of the things that we do when we are at the due diligence stage, we do what we call sensitivity analysis to see if the rent goes to this, if the electricity is that, and if all of those inputs, what we need to, and we hopefully, with the information that we have and the one that the KDD gives us, that will inform really on the robustness of the project to sustain those. But as we know, the environment sometimes changes and it might indeed put in additional pressure. Chair, I hope we've covered all the questions with the members. And if the members feel we haven't, we can assist us, Chair.
Okay. I think we fairly satisfied with the on which. Why are you laughing? You're laughing at Feli, or you're laughing at Mabasa. Mabasa wanted to close. I'm worried about time. Because Please, one second.
I'll pass the test. With these parks, you are best placed to help recognize the appropriate supportive government or private sector entities, be it ESCOM, be it water, be it so that I will advise that you also explore if you can package that, because without some of these criticals, then it falls down again, especially because it's not usually located in an industrial area. It's usually planned within a residential area, so that they will say the water that goes there can only triple, you know, or the electricity.
Thank you. Just want to, on behalf of the committee, thank you very much for the way you have really responded. Firstly, the way you've prepared your documents, as usual, very informative. Very professional, and the way you also responded to the questions raised by members. We're hoping that whatever we interacted with you on will be, as promised by yourself, will be taken into consideration, and where possible, be implemented. And really, through you,
we're looking at seeing South Africa, you know, being a better place to live in, and also for investors being a better place. We don't want just to encourage people to come. We want also people from South Africa to go as big businesses to compete internationally. And we're also looking through you that Africa will be also competing with the EU and so forth. So as we borrow from them, let's also mind the fact that we'd want to have banks like that in Africa. We know, unfortunately, SATA has taken us three steps backward in terms of our investment in Zambia, the banking transaction. But we're hoping that through negotiations something will come out of it. But we want to see us growing and competing with the EU countries and the West. And you are our hope. I think everybody, when talking IDC, we all have our hopes high. As we talk billions of investment led by IDC, this is the country depending on you. So if you were working twice harder, I think now you have to triple that so that we see a quicker result. So thank you very much. I can see the passion, I can see the commitment, I can see dedication, and we can only wish you well in this bigger task. I just saw that Woolies CEO is being paid $13.5 million, and I wonder if the IDC taking care of the country would be paid $20 million. And what would the taxpayer, so the people on my left, saying now after I closed this meeting, what would you be saying? That was on a lighter note. But all the best, really, in your work. I guess you prepared the 2-quarter report? Yes. That will be dealt with after the lunch break, which is now. Some of the members will... Please, can I get an indication from members? If... Let me continue. Some of the members, I know that they belong to other committees. By right, they should be sitting in those committees in the afternoon, because our time period is in the morning. But can I please get an indication beforehand so that I know who will be present and who will not be present in the next sitting of the meeting? Thank you very much. We can now break for lunch.
Because we only have the annual report.